Help me! Are we having a party?
Hey everybody, welcome to the Friday Filibuster. This is Dave Johnson, joined by Mac McIntyre.
Hackadoo.
Daryl Loomis.
Hello.
Eric Asperslager.
Hello.
And also. And we're here after a one-week hiatus to rejoin the world of magic and entertainment. And Mac, why don't you be the first to usher us in to this beautiful Xanadu?
Okay, well, I don't know about that, but I did see something with no small amount of magic in it.
Yes.
I saw Jack the Giant Slayer.
Ah, okay. And?
It was...
Yeah, I guess the turnout hasn't really... Oh, it has actually supported your reaction, because I don't think it's been doing gangbusters.
Yeah, I mean, it was okay, but just not that great, you know? I kind of saw it just because in the hopes that it... Because Bryan Singer directed it, and I hope, well, maybe, just maybe he'll surprise me, but not really.
Let me put a question to the group real quick. What has Bryan Singer done, aside from Usual Suspects, that's really kind of, you know, floated your boat?
Been worth anything?
Like, honestly, just really thinking about it. And maybe you can help me out here.
I was, when it came out, and I haven't seen it in years, but Apt Pupil was something that I really did enjoy when it came out.
That's right. That's based on the Stephen King book, right?
Yeah.
All right.
And that was the movie he did, I guess, right after The Usual Suspects. But, you know, you've got the X... I mean, when they came out, the X-Men movies were... You know, the original X-Men movie was fun. I had fun. But it's not anything that I'm going to sit back and... want to spend much time with today.
I mean, I think we tie his name to high quality, right? And so, I mean, Eric, Mac, do you guys have? I guess like Superman Returns did nothing for me. The first X-Men, I really kind of lost interest in. X2 is still pretty good, and then Usual Suspects. But I guess I'm not. I don't know. I'm just wondering if has he matched the hype?
There's just not a lot that he's. I mean, just he hasn't directed very much. And, you know, after Usual Suspects and Apt Pupil, it's the superhero movies and then Valkyrie, which did nothing for him.
Oh, yeah. Valkyrie, yeah. I forgot that one.
And then Jack and the Giant Slayer,
Jack the Giant Slayer. Yeah, I like the first two X-Men movies a lot, X2 especially. I thought they really nailed it. But, I don't know, he's a really talented guy, but he just has trouble. He can't quite find the right projects to sort of match his talent, maybe.
Did he do any TV work? Was he connected with any TV work? He must have.
Oh,
directed the pilot of House.
House.
Oh, yeah. That's right, House, yeah.
But, I mean, you know, it, ultimately his resume just doesn't really reflect that kind of cachet. You know, I mean, he hasn't written anything very interesting. He hasn't directed anything very interesting in a decade. His productions aren't that. I mean, just looking at what's going on IMDb, it's just not. There's just nothing there that grabs me at all.
Yeah. I'm just wondering. It's one of those names I associate with high quality, and as I think about it, I'm not sure if there's a ton of stuff that's, you know, blows wind up my skirt, if that's a metaphor.
Yeah, I don't think it really flies. I agree with you that when I see his name, I'm like, oh, well, that's, you know, that's something to look at, but really, when I go back and look at the whole bit, it's not there.
Well, sorry for the digression, Mac. Jack the Giant Slayer. What else are you?
Jack the Giant Slayer. Yeah, it's not going to change your guys' mind about Singer. The biggest problem with the movie is Jack himself. He's such a goody-goody. You know, it's like he's just the ultimate nice guy. He never does anything wrong. He has no flaws. He's just like this perfect guy who always does the right thing and who's always the hero, and he's just so bland.
So like Superman from Superman Returns, is that what you're saying?
Oh, yeah, that is the most bland Superman.
Yeah, Brandon Ralph, right?
Yeah, and I'd say he's even more bland than Superman. Because, you know, at least Superman could do stuff like fly Jack just kind of runs around with a smile on his face because he's just so wonderful. And there's really not much in the movie we haven't seen before. It ends with the giant battle at the siege with the castle, and there's a few double crosses, and I don't know. I guess some of the effects with the giants, there's one in particular, one giant has a cool special effect going about him. I won't spoil it, but I don't know. It's right in the middle. It's just right in the absolute dead center of just mediocre.
All right.
So I was thinking about going to see the Oz movie, but after Jack the Giant Slayer, it's like, do I want to watch another one of these?
Yeah.
The Oz movie looks kind of terrible.
Was that a movie that was asked for? You know, was that clamored for? The Oz? Prequel to Wizard of Oz?
Well, it's a property that hasn't been mined to death yet. So Hollywood is like, we got to do Oz, we got to do Oz.
Not ringing endorsements, alas. Daryl, what else have you got going on?
See, in the last couple of weeks, I finally broke down and started catching myself up on The Walking Dead. After the fifth and sixth episodes of the first season, I bowed out of that show. I really liked the first four episodes. I thought it was really interesting, and I'm a fan of the comics, so I was really interested to see how they changed everything. And then those final two episodes of the first season really basically destroyed me for a full 2 years of actually trying to watch the show. After enough assurance that the stuff that goes on in the fifth and sixth episodes of the first season has nothing to do with anything else, I went back and finally a couple of weeks ago sat down and started watching it. Ultimately, yeah, I'm glad I did. It's a well-done show. I'm about halfway through what's available for the third season now, and I'm glad I did. It's a good show. A fair amount of good zombie violence and some good characters. You know, it's
the big knock on it is a lot doesn't. I mean, there's a lot of nothing that happens in that show.
Especially in the second season, and that was some of what probably kept me from watching it.
That's when I checked out.
But that's pretty much in concert with the comic book. That there's certain stretches where nothing goes on, but I think that the way, you know, watching it in sort of marathon style keeps the idea that, you know, when you're watching it in that way, there's never really a time, if you just go on to the next episode, that you're sitting there for a week saying, well, I just wasted 45 minutes of my week on some talk about the morning after pill. And I can see watching it week to week that would have been a really frustrating thing. But just like with the comic, if you're not reading it, the comic week to week, you can just move on, and it doesn't seem like it's got that same kind of there's not the same kind of gravitas, because it just moves on to, and then there's some zombie violence in the next episode or whatever. I think it winds up flowing together pretty well. Mm-hmm. So, you know, I'm interested to see where it goes. I still haven't caught up to where it's actually airing, but I'm pretty close.
All right. Well, on that note, Eric, I know you're a huge fan of Walking Dead. Let's move on. Yeah, what do you have to report?
Well, you know, it doesn't say much for the movie. Went to the theater last week. Almost forgot that I'd seen it until we started recording. But I went and saw Oz, the Great and Powerful, with the wife. And I haven't seen Jack the Giant Slayer. It's not as bad as that. It's not as bad as, say, you know, Alice in Wonderland, the reputation is. It's just kind of a weird middle ground movie. I'd be willing to defend the making of a new Wizard of Oz movie, because even though there is, you know, the Wizard of Oz movie that we know, the actual, you know, Oz books and series, Baum did tons of adaptations of it. I mean, there's a long history of plays and even films. He started his own film company in Hollywood to create Oz movies. So there's at least a precedent for Oz properties that aren't tied to the MGM musical. This unfortunately hitches its wagon way too much to the MGM musical, I think to its detriment. I think if they tried to kind of go back to Baum's Oz books and make something original that was even closer to what he had done, they could have, you know, set themselves apart. But they try to split the difference between this being a separate Oz story and being a direct prequel to The Wizard of Oz that we know. And I think that does not help the movie at all. It's directed by Sam Raimi, and there are some cool kind of Sam Raimi moments in the film. There's even some kind of scary stuff that I think works well. Maybe not if you're a parent bringing your kid to see the movie, but
nothing can be as terrifying as Return to Oz.
No, it's different. I mean, there's some jump scares, and there's the winged baboons in this movie that kind of come at you, and there was a young child in the theater when we saw it who had to be taken out near the end. But you know, there are those moments, and then you feel like it's also kind of drowning in studio notes. There's a lot of just kind of hokey dialogue and kind of just Disney family friendly stuff that just feels shoehorned in, like there are two or three scripts that they tried to put together. I think the best parts of the movie are when it does sort of create a different kind of Oz than we saw in the first movie. There's a whole sequence in a China village, and there's a China doll character that I think is really, really cool and different and, you know, interesting and inventive. You know, I'm sure it was out of Baum's books, but still it works as something different than what we've seen in the other movie. And then there's also kind of a whole running sub thread about just sort of filmmaking. There's a lot of references to how movies are made and some of the technology that was being developed around the time that the movie is supposedly set. And sort of the film's climax deals with some of the sort of trickery that's involved in making movies. And that kind of stuff is sort of interesting, but it doesn't go far enough with that. And it's just the casting is also kind of all over the place. Someone like Mila Kunis is fine in the beginning of the movie and then seems totally out of place at the end. James Franco is sort of up and down. I would have liked to see a movie that was a little darker, a little more inventive, and with a kind of an unknown cast. I think they probably could have done something more interesting with it. So unfortunately, it's not a disaster. It's not a terrible movie, but it's just not very good either. So,
yeah. All right. And also,
I'll talk about one more movie that is actually terrible, but kind of in a great way.
Yes.
And it's a movie that if anyone who listens goes to the F This Movie website every Friday, there's a series of trailers they put up, trailers with Doug, and one of them recently was for a direct-to-video movie called A Talking Cat, the title is actually A Talking Cat, !!! That's the actual official name of the movie.
Awesome.
And unfortunately, the AV Club wrote something about it the other day, so we kind of got beaten to the punch on that, but I went and watched it. It's on Netflix, and it is it's a super low budget movie. The dialogue is really terrible, but it features Eric Roberts in like a phoned in voiceover as this cat who has like this constant inner monologue going, but he can talk to people, and his goal in life is to help humans out, but he has this weird limitation where he can only talk to each person once for some reason. I don't know why, but like he can always. So he's trying to like get all these people to come together and solve their problems. And it's really weird. And the characters are just bizarre, but it's such a terrible movie in almost a good way. And the fact that it's on Netflix Instant means that I would almost recommend people check it out for the, at least for the hilarity factor. And the music is just – the music doesn't make any sense. Anyway, A Talking Cat, !!! is on Netflix.
Thanks for the heads up.
Check. Go Eric Roberts.
Eric Roberts.
Still doing better work than his sister.
Oh, man, I just saw Eric Roberts in some witch movie. No, yeah, Hansel and Gretel, Witch Hunters. Yeah, that's what it was.
Oh, man.
The Witchcraft, Warriors of Witchcraft, you know, the knockoff version.
Yeah.
A little TV report. I caught the pilot episode, and I will probably tune in for the second episode of History Channel's Vikings.
Yeah,
which actually isn't half bad. It's not bad at all. It looks good. It's not like corny blue screen stuff, so everything's like shot on location. And I'm just a real sucker for that kind of time period. There's a series of books that are pretty much my favorite thing in town right now, and this is kind of close to to those books. Kind of talk about the books are about like when the Vikings kind of invade, not England, like pre-England, proto-England, and talks about the birth of England. Those are the books, but the Viking culture is fascinating. This show hits on a lot of that stuff, and it's pretty well done, so I'm going to keep with it, see what's going on. It's like the only show in recent memory that I've actually been interested in checking out, so yeah, get more reports on that, but Vikings, not too bad. And, well, I guess I'm just going to bring us right into what's going on for DVD Verdict, because all hail Willow on Blu-ray. And I heard, Mac, I want to get an update from you. You said you weren't able to find it, huh?
I've only been to two places. I went to two stores on my way home. Neither of them had it. So it looks like this is going to be one that I'm going to have to hunt for.
Nice. You have to sick the devil dogs on it, I guess.
That's right.
I got mine from Amazon. I actually dropped mine off a day early, which is a great little surprise. So just dug into that. Pretty much, it's missing a commentary track, which I feel is a missed opportunity, but everything else, it's...
The DVD has one.
The Blu-ray didn't have one, so... but everything else is great. It looks great. A few dodgy scenes here and there, and some of the archaic effects look extra archaic in high definition, but everything else looks pretty awesome. It sounds great. And the bonuses are worth watching, especially the deleted scenes, which is like discovering gold, you know? I mean, just these three deleted – just finding deleted scenes to a movie you've watched a million times and treasured, it's something. And my favorite – actually, I'll run through the three scenes. They're kind of interesting, and they totally deserve to be cut out, by the way. But one was an entire side quest about Sorsha finding her father, who is actually a king from the Tirith Lean Castle where everyone was frozen in blocks of ice, you know? So there's some dialogue with Sorsha Madmargan and Sorsha Madmorda talking about her father. And then you meet her father, and he's just kind of this goofy-looking guy, and he's encased in ice, and he starts talking to Sorsha from the ice. It's just really weird. And he's actually in the theatrical cut of the film. At the very end, there's a tall old guy with a big white beard, and he's standing next to Sorsha Madmargan, as everyone celebrates. That's her father. So, yeah,
interesting.
Didn't make sense, yeah. Kind of just weird. Another one was Willow in the heat of battle as the trolls are attacking. There's this entire sequence where he uses like sleight of hand magic to hypnotize a troll, pretty much. Like he does magic tricks, and the troll watches him. You know, it's bizarre. And then Mad Maverick comes flying out and gives him the full body slam. But that
kind of steals the thunder away from the finale.
Yeah, if that stayed in there, that would have been a complete pace destroyer. And then the third one is my favorite, and I'm glad it was gone just because it's been nightmare fuel. But in the scene where Willow gets in the boat to go get Finn Rizal on that island, some weird kid is in the middle of the water. Like, it's really sort of frightening. Some weird kid shows up in the middle of the water and says, "You don't want to go there." And then he dives off into the water. And then Willow's rowing the boat, and then this kid pops out, and he's got, like, piranha teeth. He looks like Baraka from Mortal Kombat. He comes out of the water with his piranha teeth, tries to attack Willow, goes back underwater, and then a big piranha fish, like a Jaws-like prop fish, comes. And Willow battles him, and he actually throws a magic acorn on him and turns him into stone on this piranha fish. And the fish boy sequence looked pretty in-depth, but the fish was pretty fake. But cool to watch. Great movie, obviously. Looks great, and it is an excellent movie. Highly recommend. And last thing, reviewing Duck Dynasty. You guys heard of this show, Duck Dynasty?
Oh, yeah, those guys with the funky beards.
It's good. It's a good show.
Really?
Yes, it's good. It's funny, and it's not the show you expect. It's not like a show, hey, let's laugh at all these rednecks. It is, you know, you laugh. They're legitimately funny, and it's actually a sweet, natured family show. You know, it's nothing like soul crushing like Honey Boo Boo or whatever. You know, it's got a great heart, and it's real funny, and I would recommend it. So Duck Dynasty, not bad at all. That's what I got cooking. Mac, what do you have coming?
Okay, let's see, for the to review, well, the review's already up already. I got the second volume, or the part two, of the animated Dark Knight Returns.
Yes.
This is the latest from the Warner Brothers, you know, direct-to-DVD animation, or direct-to-Blu-ray in this case, based, of course, on the legendary Frank Miller graphic novel. And it's really good. They did a really good job in this part, too. You'd think it'd be an impossible task just because of some of the content that's in the graphic novel that's really, like, out there, and just the fact that it's something that's so famous and so well-known, and those kind of two things combined, but they really went for it. A lot of Frank Miller's weirdness they kept in the... You know, and they kept in the plot and they kept in the story. So, you know, it's definitely not for kids. But and you can tell how they went through the graphic novel and they really found what are the most important plot points and you know, where the story turns. And then those are the moments that they've really expanded upon and made the big moments in the movie. So it's like I'm watching the movie, then I go back and flip through the graphic novel, and I can see they've just made all the right choices, you know, right choice after right choice after right choice. So it's very well made, and it really impressed me. It's like, because adapting that thing is just like a Herculean task. I don't know how anyone could do it, and not only did they do it, but they really exceeded expectations. So definitely recommend this one.
Nice. All right, Daryl.
Let's see. It's been a couple of weeks, so I can still talk about this. This review just went up a couple of days ago. I watched a movie called Sushi Girl, which I didn't know what to expect when I got it. It basically has all the trappings of fake grindhouse cinema. So, you know, hardcore violence and stunt casting and all of that stuff. But I was skeptical. But ultimately, it sort of eschews all of those things for a really good traditional grindhouse-style movie about four gangsters sitting around a table. It's really cheap. It's the two players that people are going to recognize are Tony Todd from the titular character in Candyman, and Mark Hamill.
He's awesome.
Yeah, he's awesome. And Mark Hamill in a role and makeup that I've never seen him in. And it's basically four people who go to town on each other. It's extremely violent. There's a bunch of small roles for people like Danny Trejo, Michael Biehn, Sonny Chiba is in it, who's still looking great after all these years. It's really simple and really decent, good grindhouse stuff. So, Sushi Girl is probably one that will get some cult following as it ages, and rightfully so.
All right.
The title doesn't really scream, you know, hardcore mm-hmm. gangster movie.
No, it doesn't. The title's from a really unsavory Yakuza practice of hiring a woman to be a platter for sushi.
Oh.
And that comes into the story as a whole, but the bulk of the story is these gangsters that have come together for a meeting to celebrate one of theirs release from prison, who is, by the way, Atreyu from the Neverending Story, so there's that.
No way.
Excellent.
I don't remember his name off the top of my head, but it's his first movie in like 14 years, so... it's worth watching. I expected very little from it, and got a fair bit. It's enough to like to recommend it.
All right, Eric.
Well, this week I'm reviewing Flight, the Robert Zemeckis, Denzel Washington movie from I think over the summer. It's essentially a movie about alcoholism. Denzel Washington plays an alcoholic pilot who successfully lands a plane that's in that's going down, despite the fact that he's drunk and high at the time, and after the fact people find out, and it's a weird movie because like all of the really good and exciting stuff happens in kind of the first half hour, And then after that, it's a lot of just him being drunk. Denzel Washington is a great actor, and he gives a great performance in the movie. But it's just, it stays dark for so long and then tries to, like, do an about-face at the very end. It just, it totally doesn't work great. I mean, Robert Zemeckis doesn't strike me as the kind of person who would kind of give you a really kind of subtle, nuanced, you know, look at such a heavy subject. So it comes across as a little bit kind of after school, especially at times.
Nice.
But the, like I said, the first half hour is actually pretty, pretty incredible. The whole plane, you know, plane crash sequence is really amazing. It's almost worth watching for that, and for Denzel Washington, but not the best.
All right. Mac, why don't you take us onward?
Sure. We are going to take a look at what's coming out next week on DVD and Blu-ray, and you at home can follow along. We're going to go to DVDverdict.com, click on the DVD releases tab. From there, we're going to scroll down and hit the link for the cover art gallery for March 19th. Let's talk about what's on the list here.
Now, a lot of big stuff, but a movie that I've heard a lot about, and it looks like I might try to track it down, Samurai Cop.
Oh.
I've heard good things about Samurai Cop.
Who's in that? That's like,
I have no idea.
Some kind of famous B-movie actor is in that, yeah. Right? Oh, Robert Zadar, him with the giant chin.
Oh, yes, that's right. Yeah, thanks. That's all you had to say. You have the right to remain silent. Dead silent. Not too bad.
Oh, that's not bad.
So I'm going to hope that shows up on the product list.
There you go.
Dave, I don't know how you can say it's not a big week when The Hobbit is coming out.
Yeah, The Hobbit.
Oh, I meant to say it is a big. Came out wrong, but I said amidst. Oh, okay. Well, that and Les Miserables. So, yeah.
That's true.
Yeah, it's actually a huge week, but amidst all that hugeness is another. Yeah. So my fault for misspeaking. But yes, The Hobbit. Now, is any. I feel like. So the special frame rate edition, was that only for like our gear can't play that enhanced frame rate stuff, right?
Good question.
That's a good question. Yeah, I don't know what kind of TV you'd have to have.
Yeah, right.
It'd be for like a higher refresh rate TV.
Yeah,
or?
I would guess it had. I mean, it had to be governed by your display, probably. So, all right. Yeah, just wondering.
Interesting. I mean,
there is a 3D version there, so I don't think it's.
Yeah. And this still isn't obviously the extended edition, which won't come out probably till holiday season.
Correct. But I will probably be getting it nonetheless.
Sure.
Yeah,
sure.
Definitely.
A favorite of mine.
Finally got the release, the DVD release of MVP, Most Valuable Primate.
That's and MVP 2.
Yeah. And the sequel.
And Porky's clearly is a priority for all of us on Blu-ray.
Zero Dark 30 as well. There's some heavy hitters.
Yeah. Oh, I didn't even see that in there. Yeah.
You never see it until it's too late, Mac.
That's right.
You got This Is 40, the Judd Apatow.
Yes, which I never got around to finishing. Started watching it.
Oh, yeah. Really?
Yeah, I'll started watch watching
it. High praise.
It was rough. It was exactly what I feared it was going to be. So, you know, Paul Rudd is semi-funny, but I just can't get on board with Leslie Mann's character. The character is as shrill as you would expect. So,
Dave, we've got another Krav Maga disc.
I saw that. That guy is taking
danger in the street.
Yeah. He's in the street. He's on the rooftops, really.
Now, I'm no martial arts expert, but it looks on the cover art, it looks to me like the guy who's doing the kicking, he's about to fall over. As soon as that kick is completed, that guy's just going to fall backwards, isn't he? I don't know how he can
keep Krav Maga training.
Oh, is it? Okay, he can maintain his balance even when...
Oh, yeah.
That's what he wants you to think, Mac.
That's right.
Like, oh, he's going to fall over, and then he punches you right in the face.
What else?
Yeah, Bachelorette was seemed like it might be relatively funny, although maybe a knockoff of Bridesmaids, but it seems like it could be funny.
Oh, I don't know much. Who's in that one?
Kirsten Dunst, Isla Fisher.
Mm.
It seems basically like a Bridesmaids knockoff.
Yeah,
Bridesmaid knockoff, but still, it could be funny.
And Terrence Malick's Badlands is getting a Criterion release.
Oh, yeah. It's really boring. It's worth watching, but really boring.
Well, it's Malick. He does the slow pace. But
he's always been slow. I mean, at that point, that was only his second movie, and he's only done, what, five total movies in his career or whatever, six. But Badlands is particularly sparse. A lot of silent moments with Sissy Spacek and Martin Sheen, and a lot of desolate landscape. So, you know, it is what it is, and it's a good movie, but it's kind of hard to recommend on a certain level.
Have anyone heard of this movie, Time Rider, starring Fred Ward, no doubt, no less?
Yeah, it's mostly famous just for the poster with the cool motorcycle guy.
That's a bad sign, yeah.
Those are like, those are the backdrop for a pinball game.
Yeah, that'd be awesome.
Sorry. Yeah.
All right. Actually, so a pretty robust week. Something for everybody. So, what do you got for a sleazy DVD release, Mac?
Let's see. How about Curse of the Yellow Snake?
That's good. That's the winner. Eric?
I'll go with Adventures in Appletown.
That's good, too. Daryl?
I'm going to go ahead and go with Dark Feed.
I'm glad you didn't take mine. Rust and Bone.
That's a good one.
All right. So, okay, we are going to kick into overdrive now and wrap up our production here this week with ambush topics, random topics thrown at each other for mirth and amusement. I'll go first. Big news. It looks like a Veronica Mars movie might be coming to us, courtesy of Kickstarter.
Oh, it's coming, Dave.
It's coming, all right. So
it's been financed. $2 million in like 10 hours.
Wow. Yeah.
That's so amazing.
We might see the Veronica Mars movie, and very happy about that. So what would you back? What movie would you back on Kickstarter? I'll just go right there. Any movie you want. Sequel to a movie you love.
Another Hellraiser movie written and directed by Clive Barker.
Yeah, not bad.
You would
pony up cash on the Kickstarter.
I would pony up cash for the Kickstarter on that. There's been a rumored / confirmed, I don't know, remake of the original Hellraiser that's been going around for a few years. And there's really nothing that can make that movie better. There's just nothing there that you can do to make Hellraiser a better movie. And if Clive Barker, and he had nothing to do with any of the sequels, and some which I really like, but if he had something to do with an honest sequel to Hellraiser, I would lay money down on that.
All right.
It's kind of like Oz, you know, it's this property that's just sitting there that's just waiting to be pounced upon. See, I'm trying not to go with the obvious. I'll just go with the obvious because it's all on our minds this week. So imagine the sequel to Willow coming to us.
See, now that's a good question. So, but it wouldn't be hopefully it wouldn't be based on the boring novelizations. You know, the boring.
Oh, where they killed everybody off? No.
Yeah, that'd be lame.
How old is Warwick Davis at this point?
40s.
Is he only in his 40s?
See, Val Kilmer is who I'd be more concerned about.
Well, what I'm thinking,
high adventure that he was.
I'm thinking going a little farther because the baby, Alora Dannon,
okay,
she's supposed to have this amazing destiny where she like saves the world or some crap. So let's tell that story.
All right,
that's when comes of age and saves the world from whatever she's going to save the world from. That's the story I want to see.
But her prophecy was that she's bringing down Bav Morta specifically. So
was that it?
So I guess she fulfilled it indirectly.
Oh, so she doesn't get to have
that more to zap herself on her magic.
That's if she peaks as a baby. She doesn't get to have more.
She plateaued as a 9-month-old. So. But maybe Bad Mortar comes back, you know?
Yeah, that's true, because she was banished to another universe, yeah, so that you can always bounce back from that, yeah.
Now, I don't know if this would have to be good, but I guess you don't know. If it's a Kickstarter, you just like put your money in and hope for the best. But
that's right.
If it was a good Gremlins 3, I could be behind that. There was talk at some point of like a Gremlins in space. That would be I would want to see.
Yeah, that's true. Like
that would have been the same time that Leprechaun and
Jason X
and Hellraiser 4. Yeah, all of that stuff was in space. So
Gremlins 3. Yeah, I'd probably put some cash behind that.
I don't know if I'd want to see CGI Gremlins, though.
That's true.
Right? Well, I mean, that's why I said it had to be good. I mean, I want to see a practical.
Yes.
I say give it back to Joe Dante. Maybe he can do like a Gremlins. Maybe they invade like a cartoon world or something. Kind of combine his Twilight Zone segment with the Gremlins and make something out of that. I don't know. You know. Who knows?
Yeah, Dante really lives in that sort of retro world, so I think he's the one who could be trusted to kind of keep things practical and really have fun with it.
I would, for me, I would put up money for it, not because I think it would be, and it would fulfill me in like, this is an objectively good movie, but it was promised to me, and I want it, the sequel to Masters of the Universe. Skeletor popped up, told me he was coming back, so give me the sequel. Or the Mac and Me sequel that was promised. So yeah, Masters of the Universe. I think Dolph could still pull it off. Maybe give him a little more clothing to work with. But yeah, Billy Barty's no longer with us. But we got the CGI to do Orko. Actually, we don't want Orko. Forget Orko. okay. So
what characters weren't in the movie that you'd That's like true. To see in the sequel?
Triclops.
Beast Man
was in the first movie.
Oh, no. I mean Ram Man.
Ram Man needs to be in there. Yes.
Was Lockjaw in the movie?
Lockjaw was not in the movie.
Is that the name? Yeah.
Triclops needs to be in the movie. Skunk-tor.
Skunk Man. Yeah,
Skunk-tor, yeah. Skunk Man. Get him in there.
Moss Man.
Moss
Man. For some reason, like, I ended up with all the lamest He-Man action figures. I had like three skunk guys. I don't know how that worked.
Can I just say that's no wonder why Skeletor was always in a crappy mood? Look what he had to work with. Moss Man. Skunk-tor. You know what I mean? No wonder.
Evil Lynn had, you know, could hold her own, but
Evil Lynn could hold her own. Yeah.
Was a pile of garbage.
Yeah, and I mean, and the big one would be Battle Cat. Does Battle Cat get a shot at, you know, at the new live-action He-Man sequel? Don't know. We'll see. Yeah. Depends on how much we raise on our Kickstarter. If it's $2 million, probably not going to happen. It would be He-Man on a bearskin rug, and that'll be the best.
You know, this is
a different movie.
Bring it back to Veronica Mars just for a second. Like, as of right now, it's well over $2 million. I've looked.
They don't cap it? Like, they don't cap it?
No. No, they had to raise at least $2 million to make the movie, but anything over that will just go into making it a better movie.
Oh, okay.
Making it not just people sitting around talking at a table or something. So, there's 30 days left, or 29 or whatever, when at this point, I'm sure they won't continue to accumulate money at that rate, but you could be looking at like, you know, tens of millions of dollars to make this movie.
What Kickstarters do is they'll add more rewards as the month goes on. To encourage more donations. Or they're not donations, but more purchases.
Yeah, the awards are kind of cool. Like, I think for the $10,000 one or whatever, it was just a one. But you got a speaking part of the movie. Right?
Yeah. Nice. I backed it. I'm getting the DVD and nice. Digital, all that stuff. So, yeah.
Yeah, I might have Why to not? Follow we your know, lead. That's good. That's good.
Well, you know, it's you only have these times, you know, once. This is, I want to be part of history.
And I will say I'm generally interested in what, I mean, that is a, that was a show that ended without much closure. So
right.
Let's see it. Let's see the closure. Let's see the Logan storyline resolved.
Did it go two full seasons?
Three.
It was three seasons? Okay.
Third season ended on a cliffhanger.
Yeah, I this is and Veronica Mars is tied to my history with the site too, because that was you and I recorded the Veronica Mars postmortem podcast shortly before I started writing for the
Look
site.
Look at that. Not bad.
Here we are. Here we are now.
That's right.
Making movies.
Making movies. You're a producer now. Yeah? You're a producer.
Executive associate partner.
That's right. Like, yeah, you get a credit listing? Do all backers get, like, in the credits? Get mentioned?
I don't. Probably not.
I think probably.
It'd be like,
would you donate X amount to get an executive producer credit? You
know? I don't know. Yeah, honestly, that might be one of the things that's on there. I don't know. I don't want it to end up being like one of the Lord of the Rings special editions where it's actually an extra 45 minutes.
They
long.
Did the whole fan club, yeah.
Yeah, that's right.
Could you imagine they use your login ID to Kickstarter? Thank you, director producer Southside Jim 25.
Password is.
Yeah. All right, Mac. What do you got? Your ambush topic.
Okay, my ambush topic: strange and unusual dogs.
Oh man, I gotta go. Gotta go with the classic. Gotta go with Air Bud.
Air Bud.
The dog can play basketball.
He delivers.
Dog can play basketball.
Yeah, and then he goes on to play many, many more things. He goes on to accomplish more than we've ever accomplished.
I mean, really, I'm a purist. I've only seen minus the one Buddy's movie that I had to review that was terrible. I'm gonna go with just Air Bud. He plays basketball. It's what he does.
He does.
And maybe he might go as an ambassador to North Korea at some point. I'm not sure. I haven't watched
it. Possible. It's a good chance. do you think what the heck was his name? Falcor counts as a dog from Neverending Story?
Kind of. he looks like one. He looks very luck dragon, correct?
He's a luck dragon, I know, but he's got a very dog. He's got kind of like a dog face. I think he's got like dog hind legs, doesn't he? Like when he scratches himself, doesn't he have like the?
I don't remember. He's got dog, big floppy dog ears. I remember that.
He definitely does. Yeah,
he's a dog. I mean, I think the topic is unusual dogs.
Yes,
right.
It's true. That's an unusual dog. That is my answer. Falcor from Neverending Story. He is an unusual dog.
I'm gonna go with Hooch from Turner and Hooch.
Nice.
doing what movie, he can. Yeah, doing what he can to solve his owner's murder and. Tom Hanks, the whole bit.
Good. Doing what he can to solve his owner's murder. Huh? Tom Hanks, movies are great.
Well, right, for mine, everybody went right. Yes. For mine, I spent all weekend rewatching the Nightmare on Elm Street films.
Yes.
And I get to part two.
How were they?
On the new Blu-rays, we'll talk about. I was saving those for next week, but nice. Short version Blu-rays are pretty good. Mostly a carryover from the DVDs, but you know it's nice to have them all in one package.
Roseanne Barr treating you well.
Oh my God! Well, that's a story for another time. We'll talk about the other awkward entry in the series, which is part two. There's a whole lot of crazy stuff going on in part two, but what I really want to talk about is at the end. Where the girl is going to quote-unquote rescue her boyfriend who's been possessed by Freddy. She ends up in the boiler room where she's running through this sort of chamber of horrors, and one of the first things she encounters is these two dogs with faces of human babies.
Nice.
And they're, like, blocking her path. And it's like, of all the controversial, strange stuff that people discuss whenever they discuss Part 2, they never discuss dogs with babies' faces. And it's like, you know... I think the fans need to include dogs with babies' faces in the ongoing discussion of the many issues surrounding Part 2. Because the dogs with babies' faces, they need to have their due.
They're such an unrepresented minority, I think.
Exactly.
Are you sure they weren't just pugs?
It's true, pugs do have...
They're pretty ugly. I mean, babies are cute, sorry, but...
Pugs are like light brown though. These dogs were the bodies are like black, and the babies' faces are like you know Caucasian. So it's really messed up looking. They drool and stuff too.
Nice. All right, Daryl, what do you got?
We're gonna go with death by a common household item.
All right, well, I'm gonna go back to Gremlins on this one.
No,
the whole chamber of gremlin horrors in the kitchen from Billy's mom. The one goes in the microwave, one goes in the blender.
That's good.
It's good stuff.
I know they should have died by household implements, but the wet bandits in Home Alone, but they did not die. But they should have all been dead. They should have all been dead.
Well, I guess I can. Well, first of all, Eric, the thing in that scene from Gremlins, what really makes it work is when the microwave dings at the end.
That's good.
The perfect punctuation note on that scene. For me, I'm going to go with from the movie Carrie, when Carrie takes out her mother at the end with all of the knives and scissors flying around the house.
Oh, yeah.
It's a real epic death scene.
Well, the best I got right now is when Indy hangs the thuggy assassin from the ceiling fan.
Oh,
there you go.
Some ties him and he gets hung on the ceiling fan. So,
all right, and then I'm going to go with the entire movie of Deathbed, the bed that eats. Which I don't think I need to explain to anybody.
All right. Oh, I've seen it, and yeah,
it's an awful piece of work. But it's got a lot of death by deathbed.
That was like Crime Boat, the crime solving boat.
I'd Kickstarter Crime Boat. That's for sure.
That'd be good stuff.
All right, Eric, take us home.
All right, unconvincing injuries.
Unconvincing injuries. I think I know where you're going with this. Yeah. Okay. In Starship Troopers, the final battle with the big brain bug, right? Where Denise Richards and Jeff, the douchebag owner of the Max who cheats on Kelly, you know, and the
attic. Oh,
yeah.
I'm
talking about that. So they're fighting the brain bug, and I believe it's a brain bug. And, like, Denise Richards gets impaled through, like, the shoulder or something, like, just impaled and thrown around. And then, but that doesn't preclude her from, like, hefting a giant heavy gun with the same shoulder towards the end and just kind of opening fire. So it was a, yeah, so that was not convinced by that injury. Is that the spirit of the...
Yeah, no, that's great, hey.
All right.
It's, you know, it's loose, it's wide open, man, whatever you want. It's cool, it's all good. You could have said Falcor, I would have said okay.
mine's kind of similar one in Cloverfield. They spend the whole movie trying to find Beth, and they finally find her in, like, the top floor of the high-rise. She's got the metal rod. She's been impaled on the metal rod. It's sticking out of her gut, and then they, like, pull her off the rod, but she's still just holding her stomach. And then they walk down all the floors of the high-rise and then, like, run for 20 blocks to get to the helicopter.
She's still hanging in there, huh?
Like and I'm like, you know, she was just bleeding to death, like, 10 minutes ago, and now she's running all this way, so...
Yeah.
Maybe it's adrenaline because they're afraid of the monster that never shows its face, but I don't know.
What, are you stuck?
Stuck.
Nothing in Italian horror you could go back to?
Or something.
Not, what kind of injuries we got? We got
plain old die. Jowl
film or a guy running off his head.
They almost always just die. It's a
Hellraiser. There's got to be a guy who sustains a Hellraiser injury and just keeps fighting.
Well, yeah. I mean, there's the main. There's Uncle Frank who escapes him and then gets torn apart at the end. But he never fakes an injury or anything. He just gets torn apart at the end. He's just caught.
Let's see. Broken bones, you got blows to the head, you got knife slashes, getting run over by various vehicles.
Conceptually, there's plenty. I'm just trying to actually, like, come down on one.
Failing, come on.
Failing.
All the horror movies of our people in danger get horribly injured, but still pull it together to defeat the bad guy. There's got to be something.
Anything in a Halloween movie, maybe, or
Jamie Lee Curtis gets smacked around.
That'd be something.
Yeah, but it's not like she doesn't get smacked around. I mean, it's, you know,
High Tension. Do you ever watch High Tension?
Yeah.
I mean, that tiny girl hefting the industrial power saw. So I think she sustained some injuries there.
Yeah, but did she wind up being the killer?
That's true.
So it's not really fair.
Lots of movies are about Donald for some. Somebody's in a cast, but they're doing all kinds of feats that you'd never be able to do in a cast.
How about Darkman? Liam Neeson gets blown up and sets on fire.
Well, there is all of Darkman. Yeah, it's fair.
All of Darkman. There's a scene where he gets blown up and he was flying towards the screen. And he's on fire.
All right, then to keep from this from going on too long, I'm going with Darkman.
All right, Darkman.
All right, I'm going to get an extra bonus point for this round.
Darkman. You can roll those points over into your next month.
So I believe I have 5 gold coins. And Mac, you only have 3 bananas. I think I'm winning.
But I have 15 silver stars, so we're pretty much neck and neck. Okay, so I'm glad no one took mine. So in a Talking Cat, I don't wanna spoil the end of a Talking Cat, but I'm gonna a little tiny bit. So if you really care about a Talking Cat spoilers, don't listen now. Okay, so the emotional climax of the movie, the cat is going from one house to the other. There's 2 houses. He goes between to kind of get these people together. And on the way, there's this reckless driver we see the cat like walk across the screen, then we see the car come and we hear the squeal. And I thought, man, they just killed the cat. But so everyone's down. They get the news. The cat's been injured. He's hanging out for dear life. And they go. And it's the dog. The vet's done. The vet's done what he can to make him comfortable.
What?
No. This is all the setup. The vet's done what he can to make him comfortable. He's not good. He's probably not going to make it. They go into the bedroom where the cat is. It's just a cat sitting on the comforter with like a gauze bandage, like. draped over his head. He's just like a normal cat. There's nothing wrong with him, obviously. His head is draped over his head. And I laughed out loud. It was one of those moments. I saw it, I couldn't stop laughing.
I'm shocked.
At how bored that cat looked with just a gauze wrapper kind of half.
I really have to watch this movie.
I'll watch it tomorrow. I thought, okay, they're going to take this dark turn. They're going to kill off the cat. I can't believe it. Instead, they like tell us that he's like gravely injured, but it's just like a cat sitting on the bed.
That's the best recommendation for a Netflix movie, Netflix Haunted Man movie that I can imagine.
It gets better from there. The way that I will not spoil the real ending of the movie.
No spoilers. I want to see how this cat works out.
An amazing, magical madcap.
Mad cat.
Oh, it's funny. He's just a cat with a cross.
Okay, Eric. So the talking cat versus the cat from Pet Sematary to the death. Who wins it?
I don't know. A talking cat can talk.
That's true.
I've never actually seen Pet Sematary. I've read the book several times. I assume it's like a zombified cat of some sort that kills.
Yeah, it's all messed up and it's really scary.
Well, I mean, talking cat is all about helping people. Like, he's kind of a magical cat who likes walking in the woods and has voiceovers about, you know, he calls himself a human whisperer. instead of like, I guess it was a human slaughterer probably. So I guess, you know, Pet Sematary cat's probably going to kill him, but maybe talking cat would, improve his life, you know, give him some sage advice that would help him turn things around.
Well, with that age old question answered, I think it's time to end this Friday filibuster. Well stated. That is it. Friday filibuster at DVDverdict.com is our email. Thank you to all of our wonderful participants. Mac, take us away.
Ignore the bird, follow the river.